Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is March the 31st, 2024, or it is the 22nd day of Abib 2028. We will start our first service today for the song. Down at the cross, down at the cross where my Savior died, down where for cleansing from sin I cried. Faith in my heart was the blood I had cried. Glory to His name, glory to His name, glory to His name, glory to His name. Put in the heart where the blood of blood. Glory to His name. I am so wondrously saved from sin. Yahshua so sweetly abides within. There at the cross where He took me in. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Put in my heart was the blood of Christ. Glory to His name. O precious fountain that saves from sin, I am so glad I have come to end. There Yahshua saves me and keeps me clean. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Hath in my heart was the blood of blood. Glory to His name. Come to this fountain so rich and sweet. Bless our poor soul at the Savior's feet. Plunge in today and be made complete. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Let in my heart was the blood of Christ. Glory to His name.
Our one Tommy Green. Actually, it's number 50. So, prayer thought is taken from Christ Object Lessons by Ellen G. White, page 18. It says, in His teaching from nature, the Seer speaking of the thing which His own hands had made, and which had qualities and powers that He Himself had imparted. In their original perfection, all created things were an expression of the thought of Yahweh. And the earth is, for the earth is now marred and defiled by sin. For the Yahweh's object lesson are not obliterated, rightly understood. Nature speaks of her Creator. And the days of Yahshua, let's do that again. For the earth is now marred and defiled by sin. For the Yahweh's object lessons are not obliterated, for the rightly being understood, is with the nature speaking of her Creator. In the days of the Yahshua, these lessons had been lost sight of, for the sinfulness of humanity had cast a pall over the fair face of the creation, and instead of the manifesting Yahweh, his works became a barrier that concealed him. So in Israel, man's teachings had been put in the place of Yahweh, not only the things of nature, but the sacrificial service and the scriptures themselves, all given for the revealing of the Yahweh, the Father, Creator, and were so perverted that they became the means of concealing Him. For I wonder if the world is not about the same today as it was in the Yahshua's day, for the Jews were given a great opportunity for the revealing of the Yahweh unto humanity. But instead they concealed Him. For the Christians, the apostolic converts that are quarreling and bickering, bringing doctrines of man into the doctrines of Yahweh, are not revealing Yahweh unto the heathen, but are concealing Him, turning them against Him. Such are not making converts to Yahshua, but are driving souls away from Him. We must pray that we do better, that we do not conceal Yahshua, but reveal Him in all our works and through our lives. That's the end of our prayer thought. Life is but what we make it. Okay, July the 19th, 1947, Viti Hata, Shepherd's Rod, to find out that life is really what we make it. I shall bring unto the attention seven examples beginning in the Noah's day and ending in our day. Example number one, Noah was commanded to build an ark and to tell the world that a flood is going to cover the earth, that only those who would get into the ark would escape alive. For the 120 years later, the animals were strangely seen to march two and two into the ark for the Noah, and his family also went in, while the rest of the whole of the world laughed and ridiculed. But when the rain began to pour, the situation ceased to be funny. Those outside the ark cried, mourned, pled, but all perished as fools only, because they had failed to give heed unto the present truth, had failed to feed on the meat in the due season. What folly, what disaster. One would think that after the deluge, the world would have had a great respect for the religion and for the prophets of Yahweh, but that was not the case. The Antediluvians did not believe Noah's prediction that there was to be a flood, so they refused to go into the ark, but the flood came, and they perished. For the post-deluvians did not believe his prediction that there was not to be another flood, so they set about to build the Tower of the Babel. But when Yahweh saw the tower sky rocketing, he blasted the top of it and confounded the builders' language. That is, he blotted their own language from their minds and carved into them the languages of today. Thus he caused the birth of the famous races and languages which we today find even in the remotest parts of the earth. It was not Yahweh's purpose that the people should stuck themselves in the plains of Shinar, but that they should spread out and replenish the earth, and so when they refused to obey his command, he gave them the next best he had for them, and that they had to obey. For the man's work independent of and contrary unto Yahweh, you see, is certain to meet with a disaster. For a house that is built on the sand shall not survive a storm, and no man can possibly defeat Yahweh's purpose for men. Do not make a fool of yourselves by trying, for it takes years in the schools of the men to learn a language, but in the school of Yahweh it takes but a moment. He can blot out one language from man's brain and carve in another, and at the same time changing features of his face and the color of his skin. Yes, Yahweh can do all this more quickly than a dentist can pull a tooth. But whether a change be made for better or for worse all depends upon the individual. Example number two. Nebuchadnezzar was given a dream. Being troubled with it, he summoned the wise men of his realm to tell him the interpretation of it. They came, but there was nothing that they could do. At last Daniel was brought before the king. After hearing the king's story of the dream, Daniel said, Daniel 4:24-28, "This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come. Upon my Lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as the oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will. And whereas it commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heaven do rule, came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. For the king heard the interpretation of it, and he understood the decree. Nevertheless, he was not willing to admit that there was one greater than he. Then it came to pass that Daniel 4:29-30, at the end of the 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. For the king spake and said, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" What a statement to make after having heard Yahweh's decree. For the king has yet to learn that Yahweh rules the nation, sets up kings, and disposes kings. Let us now hear Yahweh's answer to the king's folly. Daniel 4:31-33. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from the heavens saying, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, unto thee it is spoken, for the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as the oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will. For the same hour was the thing fulfilled." upon the Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from them, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of the heaven, till his hairs were grown like the eagle's feathers, and his nails like the bird's claws. Some even unto this day do not realize that the Yahweh rule, that men are not independent of him, although they are permitted to choose whether or not to serve him. It was not necessary for the Chaldean king to live with the beasts of the field. But as he could not learn his lesson by word in the easy way, he was removed from his palace and put into a corral, there to learn by experience in the hard way. In the end of the 7 years after he had graduated, so to speak, and Yahweh through the hard knocks, the king walked back into his palace and said, Daniel 4:34-37, and at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto the heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according unto his will and the army of the heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand, or say unto him, what doest thou? At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor had and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom. And excellent majesty was added unto me. Number one, Nebuchadnezzar praised and extolled and honored the King of Heaven. All whose works are true, and his ways judgments, and those things that walk in the pride he is able to obey. Through the pride and disloyalty unto Yahweh, Nebuchadnezzar made life miserable for himself. But at last he did awake. Example number 3. Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom continued until the reign of his grandson, Belshazzar. For Belshazzar knew his grandfather's history. I think Nebuchadnezzar was actually Belshazzar's father, and his experience with the Yahweh, but he failed to profit by it, for he made a great feast unto 1,000 of his lords, and commanded that the vessels which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple and Jerusalem be brought to the feast, so that the king himself and his princes, wives, and concubines might drink therefrom. As soon as this revelry took place, there came forth fingers of a man's hand, which wrote over against the candlestick upon the plasters of the wall of the king's palace. Belshazzar was greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Then was Daniel brought before the king, and Daniel emphatically declared, in Daniel 5, chapter 5, 18-31, O thou king, as the Most High gave the Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, a kingdom, and majesty, and glory, and honor, and for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages have trembled and feared before him, whom he would be, whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened, and the pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. For they fed him with the grass like the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of the heaven until he knew that the Most High Yahweh ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whomsoever he will. Thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against it. Yahweh of the heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines, have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gods of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and Yahweh in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified? Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written. Many, many tekel upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Many, Yahweh hath numbered thy kingdom, and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances, and are found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given unto the Medes and the Persian. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with the scarlet, and put a chain of the gold about his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And that night was Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius, as a Median, took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. What a difference there could have been in the scroll of history if the Belshazzar had profited by the priceless lesson which his father, Nebuchadnezzar, had learned. Yea, what a difference it would have made. This is a needful lesson for us all, kings and peasants alike. Example number 4, for the Chaldean Empire became a Medo-Persian Empire, not because the Medes and the Persians were stronger and mightier, but because Yahweh had so decreed. Let us see. Isaiah 45:1, thus says he, Yahweh and his, unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. For Cyrus, under his command, the Medo-Persian army marched into the Babylon, had not yet been born when the prophet Isaiah wrote of him. But the Yahweh remembered his promise, and when Belshazzar felt perfectly secure, on the night of the revelry and fatal debauchery, Yahweh opened before Cyrus the two-leaved gates and made possible the capture of the kingdom. There the Medes and the Persians met Daniel and his companion, who called Cyrus attention unto the scriptures, which not only predicted his victory, but even foretold his name. Having seen and felt the power of Yahweh, Cyrus was moved to the decree. Ezra 1:2-11. Thus saith the Cyrus, king of the Persian, the Yahweh of the heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His Yahweh be with him, and let him go up unto Jerusalem, which is in Judea, and build the house of the Yahweh, of the Israel. He is the Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem, and whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, that the men of his place help him with the silver and with the gold and with the goods and with the beast, build or beside the freewill offering for the house of Yahweh that is in Jerusalem. Then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judea, of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, with all of them whose spirit Yahweh had raised to go up to build the house of Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem. And all they that were about them strengthened their hands with the vessels of the silver, with gold, with the goods, and with the beast, and with the precious thing, besides all that was willingly offered. Also Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of Yahweh, which the Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and had put them in the house of his gods, even those that Cyrus king of the Persia bring forth by the hand of the Mithridat, the treasurer, and numbered them unto Sheshbazzar, the prince of the Judah. And this is the number of them: 30 charges of the gold, 1,000 charges of the silver, 29 knives, 30 basins of the gold, all silver basins of a second sort, 410, and other vessels, 1,000. All the vessels of the gold and of the silver were 5,000. And 400, all these did Sheshbazzar bring up with them of the captivity that were brought up from Babylon unto Jerusalem. It is not difficult to see that if the rulers of the Medo-Persian Empire had continued for the ruling in the same spirit as the Sarah, their kingdom would have stood until this day. For the kingdom, though, it gave way unto the Grecia, Grecia unto Rome, and Rome unto the nations of today. Plain enough it is to see that the kingdoms of today still stand because Yahweh had purposed it so, for their growing more and more independent of Yahweh will sooner or later bring the end of them also. For looking down through the stream of time, down unto the kingdoms of today, which are depicted by the feet and toes of the great image, for the spirit with the spirit of the truth wrote, whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay and part of the iron, for the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of the clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with the miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with the clay. And in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Forasmuch as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Yahweh hath made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure, Daniel 2:41-45. Rather than merging into the kingdom of Yahweh, they will have to be destroyed. Example number 5. Now let us see what benefit the kingdoms and nations have reaped from coming in contact with the church. For the Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, who came in contact with the church, make up the civilized world of today. Look at the nations and peoples, the heathen and the somewhat isolated places of the earth, who were not so fortunate as to meet the church as early as the other nations. But still further, look at those who are still more isolated in the remotest parts of the earth, who have had no contact with the church, not until just recently. Most of them are but little better than animals, not only in the intelligence, but even in the progress. For the people who were fortunate enough to be the closest to the religion of Yeshua are, you will find, as the most intelligent, as the most prosperous, for the England, for example, who translated the Bible and published and scattered it throughout the world unto all peoples and languages, became the greatest of the nations in its time. Then the United States, but a sister nation unto the English Empire, less than two centuries ago founded this government upon the principles of the Bible and inscribed on its dollar, God we trust, and who also established the America's Bible Society in but a comparatively few years, became the greatest of the nations, as did the Hebrews in their day. On the other hand, those who turned against the religion of the Bible were left desolate. Their blessings became a curse unto them. For the hated the Jews, for whom there is no spot on earth, are the best example. Germany, who led out in the Reformation but who turned back from it, has reaped a sorrowful harvest too. And what is true with the nations is just as true with the individuals, homes, families, and community. If you will take a little time to observe, you will see this law of the blessings and curses and the demonstration everywhere without the exception. For the world was founded upon the religion, and you can rest assured that when religion disappears from the earth, the world will disappear with it. Those who fall in love with the truth will find that the blessings will reciprocally fall in love with them. Let us read in 2 Thessalonians 2:8-12. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom Yahweh shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness, and them that perish because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause Yahweh shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in the unrighteousness. We see that if we do not fall in love with the truth, deception is inevitable. No and none are deceived by coming into contact with the error, for we are in contact with it anyway, from the time we are born and the time we die. But everyone who does not love the truth is sure to be deceived, regardless what he may do to avoid it. And those who are satisfied with the truth of yesterday, who are not looking for fresh truth for today, from the throne of Yahweh, not looking for the meat in due season, such ones will find themselves in as terrible a predicament as did the Jews spewed out. Deuteronomy 30:15-19. See, I have set before thee this day life and good, and death and evil. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. Example number 6, if we fail to profit by what Yahweh tells us, we shall fall as badly as, if not worse, as any who have failed before us. I think some of you who have had personal contact with the Yahweh know of these things through the experience of your own. Doubtless, you have found that you cannot long grieve or prevent explosion or keeping the fire and gunpowder in the same room, that you cannot serve the devil and yet have peace with the security. Let me illustrate this by an actual incident. A certain man dreamed that a horse killed him by kicking him. To safeguard his life, he ever after kept his distance from all horses. Nevertheless, one windy day, as he was walking down the street, he passed a blacksmith establishment in front of which was hanging a sign with a horseshoe painted on it. The sign suddenly fell on his head, and he died from the impact. We can no more avoid the consequences of sin and of the isolation from Yahweh than could the dreamer avoid death by the dodging it. We never know what the day will bring forth, and we cannot afford to isolate ourselves from Yahweh even for a moment. Neither can we say definitely that we will not do this, that, or the other. Example number 7. Some years ago, while in Europe, I heard that one of my cousins had left for America. I then said to myself, poor cousin, I will never leave home and go to live anywhere as far away as America for any reason. But about that time, I, along with others, was falsely accused of conspiracy. It was in the season when the nights were long, and as we passed on the lights in our store, one morning became before daylight, a mob gathered with guns and stones and stormed the window. So it was just a few months after I took pity on my poor cousin's estrangement from his homeland, I found myself in America in the same house with him. It was a great disappointment at first. No, not lesser than Joseph's of old, but what a favor at last. Yahweh blessed the mob. Only Yahweh knows the future, and we should place our hopes and ambitions in His mighty hand. Then, and then only, will we come to the top. And if we are tempted to say we will not or will not do this or that, then let us remember Jonah. He said he would not bear a message to Nineveh, and straightway took a boat for Tarshish. But the boatman threw him overboard, and a great fish picked him up and brought him right back to the place whence he was trying to run away. For the Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, thought to persuade the kingdom, or to perpetuate his kingdom by ordering all of his subjects to bow down to his golden image. For the three Hebrews, though, defied his purpose and changed the course of history. For the men who threw the Hebrews into the fire furnace were themselves burned to death, but not a hair of the Hebrews' heads were singed. All the time they remained inside the fiery furnace. Let us let the psalmist lift up our voices and say, in Psalms 8, verse 1 to 6, O Yahweh, or Yahshua, or Yahshua, he's talking about the Son here, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens, out of the mouth of the babes and suckling. Hast thou ordained strength because of thy enemies, that thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger? When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with the glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hand. Thou hast put all things under his feet. For the prophet Malachi was instructed to write for the people that were to live in the time of the end. Let us read from chapter 4 of Malachi, verses 1 to 3. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as the oven, and all the proud yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith Yahshua of the host. This is the Son talking, Yahweh, of Yahweh, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch, but unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with the healing in his wing, and he shall go forth and grow up as the calves of the stall, and ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet, and the day that I shall do this, saith Yahshua of the host. Is it not better to be a human being in the Yahweh's order, as a beautiful, ever-living creature, than to be ashes under the soles of the saints? Why not now respond unto his call and make life what it ought to be? Malachi 4:4-6. Remember ye the law of the Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in the Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgment. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers unto the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Are you waiting, watching, praying, and hoping that when this antitypical Elijah, as the prophet, appears and calls on you, that your heart be turned toward your children and their hearts toward you? Or are you crawling under your shell, as it were, for fear that you be deceived if you should meet him? Life, you see, is what you make it. Most people do not know how to make it better. But if you know these things, happy are you if you do them. For to summarize this study, we have learned that we have been put into this world for a purpose. That if we want salvation and blessings, we must cooperate with Yahweh. This we can do by following the examples of the Yahweh's truth-hungering people. To enable us to do this, he has seen to it that both the glories and the calamities of both classes have been noted in his book. if we compare our verse with the Noah's verse, we will see whether we measure up with him in the obeying of the present truth. Neither the antediluvians nor the post-diluvians did profit from the Noah's preaching, for the former did not believe it possible to flood the earth and perish. The latter did not believe it possible for the earth not to be flooded again. They built the Tower of the Babel because they feared another flood, although they were plainly told that there will be such a flood no more. Yahweh, though, not only destroyed their work, but also confounded their language, and in exchange gave them all different languages so that few could understand one another. If we work to fulfill Yahweh's plans for us, we shall never be confused or confounded. Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, is at last saw these things as Yahweh sees them, but the hard way, not before Yahweh turned him loose for the 7 years to eat grass, like the oxen. Later, when he came to himself, he acknowledged Yahweh as the Yahweh who rules both heaven and earth. Let us do better than did the king. Then Nebuchadnezzar, as the king who failed to profit by the experience of the Nebuchadnezzar, overnight lost himself, his kingdom, and his all. Ruler followed a ruler, and finally the kingdom passed unto the Medo-Persians, unto the Grecians, next to the Romans, and finally to the nations of the dead. For the nations you see belong to Yahweh, and he lets them be ruled by whomsoever he will. For the nations who came nearest unto Yahweh and his teaching became great and respectable nations, and those who kept themselves away from him are not much better than animals. It is best to learn what Yahweh wants you to do than to do just that, for life truly is just what we make it. No less and no more. Now is your chance. Now you are at the two crossroads. Which will it be for you, the wide or the narrow? Which? This brings the end of our study for this hour of One Time to Greenwich, number 50. Continue. One Time to Greenwich, number 50. The gifts of Yahweh. The gifts are greater in my dreams, the gifts of God to me, as countless as the sunset's golden beams, as boundless as the sea. I ask a part, he gives the whole, himself and all beside. His loving kindness overflows my soul in rushing as the tide. Within my heart he shall have placed to rule and reign supreme. My voice will ever praise him for the grace of which I ne'er could dream. His gifts are greater than my dream, the gifts of him who sets me free, and more abundant daily seen, the grace of Yahweh unto me. J.S. Pound wrote that. Tommy Readings, number 51, volume 1 of it says, religion, is religion something living and growing, or is it something dead and waning? And for the prayer thought, it says, for that study, by the Vicki Holler, which he gave on July the 26, 1947, it says, for Yahshua sought to remove that which obscured the truth. His words placed the teachings of the nature as well as of the Bible in a new aspect and made them as a pure revelation. He gave the lesson, consider the lilies of the field. Now, how they grow and the simplicity of the nature, beauty. They toil not, neither do they spin, and yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Then followed the sweet assurance and the important lesson. Wherefore, if Yahweh so clothed the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? And the Sermon on the Mount of these words were spoken in the multitude, among whom were men and women, full of their worries and perplexities, and sore with the disappointment and sorrow. For the Asur continued, therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or whithersoever shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things. We are now to pray that as your servants we do all we can to remove that which obscures the truth of today, that we find light through the nature and the Bible, and that we realize that the Yeshua cares for us more than he cares for the lilies, that we learn to trust in him and to do his bidding and be no longer like the Gentiles who worry about the things of this world, that we know he will see that we have all our needs if our chief business is to advance his kingdom. End of the prayer thought. Well, now we go into the regular study, and is religion something living and growing, or is it something dead and waning? Okay, it says that is religion something that grows and expands, or is it something that stands still? Just the other day, we heard on the radio a certain minister boast that his denomination was not added or discarded, had not added or discarded a doctrine ever since it was organized. Is this something to brag about, or is it something to be known? This is a question under which we now wish to find the answer. If the world does not stand still, if it makes the progress it does, then why should the church stand still? Why should the church not know more of Yahweh and more of the Bible today than she did yesterday? Why should the Christianity be proud of not adding Bible doctrine? What a world this would be if everything was not moving ahead as it is. If we were to compare the world's increased knowledge and accomplishments in the last 50 or 100 years with the church's increased knowledge and accomplishments in the same period of the time, we may see that there is no comparison whatsoever. Look at the progress that the world has made, and look at the stupidity which the church is cultivating. Yes, I say cultivating because it seems that rather than bemoaning the fact of not having added or discarded a doctrine, and rather than encouraging the people to be on the watch for the Yahweh's visitation, they are making it their business to keep the laity from coming in contact with the Yahweh's messenger and his progressive truth, with the meat in the due season, with the Yahweh's messages for today. Anything that does not originate in their own conventions, the laity are told to have nothing to do with it. This they do simply because they themselves do not accept the truth Yahweh sent, and because if any of their congregation came in contact with and accepted, they naturally has to join the truth wherever the truth is. So it is the chief business to teach the laity in the darkness and in the fear that someone is to deceive them if they expose themselves to anything that their ministers do not approve. Such a course may hold back progress for years, but it can never succeed. No, not any more than the opponents of the Galileo make the earth flat by the compelling him to recant his position that the earth is round, and no more than Rome succeeded against the Protestant Reformation or the priests and rabbis against the Christianity. It is therefore high time to realize that the people who must be held in the ignorance of this something in order to be kept loyal unto the church are certainly not worth having, and that the only way to have them really loyal and firmly established in the truth and saved in the everlasting kingdom of heaven is to teach the truth and then give wise freedom unto the truth, so that they themselves might personally know what is the truth and what is the error. To keep them in the darkness of what the deceivers teach, if they be their deceiver, is to keep them ignorant of what is in the air. It is to forever close heaven's communication line, and to make of the people spiritual invalids and automation. For the people must for themselves know what the truth is, and for themselves must decide what is to do with it if they are to obey or to ever to be granted admission into the kingdom. Both those who must be fenced in or led with a rope or driven with a club or as it were into the kingdom, and those who build the fence, pull the rope or hold the club will find the door closed and will hear the master say, "Depart from me, I never knew you." Ministers are not called to be taskmasters nor conscience for others. They are called to be teachers of the present truth on a daily basis. That's in Matthew 24:45. If the church is not making progress with the truth, if she is not periodically adding unquestionable knowledge to knowledge, then I am sure she has nothing to boast about. She is inactive, her communication line with the heaven is broken, is Yahweh forsaken, dead. She can never serve the members with the meat in the due season from the throne of Yahweh. Let us, for example, take religion as it is in the Bible today. It did not come all at once. Rather, it took something like 4,000 years to accumulate, and about 2,000 more years to comprehend as much as the church has comprehended by now. If we should compare Abel's knowledge of religion with his Christian's knowledge of it, we should no doubt discover that there is no comparison, that Abel knew comparatively only the very first principles of the Christian faith. If religion, therefore, is not something living, growing, and progressing, then what is it? For the Abel's religion of the 6,000 years ago has advanced and expanded to meet the people's necessities of today. And that was his faith in the blood of the animal sacrifice that represented Yahshua's blood for us today, for the salvation of our souls. This was done only by the inspiration adding unto it and its self-unfolding. If the church is not commensurately growing and expanding, then how can she be a living church, and how can she keep up with the signs of the times and with the progress in the sanctuary above? Let us read Ephesians 4:11-14. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfection of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Yeshua, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of Yahweh unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yeshua, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of the doctrine by the slightest of men and by the slight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. For the inspiration makes it plain that Yahweh's plan is that the church should ever be growing both in knowledge and profession till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of Yahweh unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yahshua, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with the every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. Since the church has not yet attained the standard set forth in this verse of the scripture, it is obvious that she needs to have a greater knowledge of the Bible, religion, than she has at the present time. Being far from having reached such unity of the faith of the knowledge and profession, we see the need as clear as crystal. We as a Christians need to start growing, otherwise the season of such growth will pass and we shall be left but dwarfed, not having advanced far enough to be eligible for a home in the kingdom. Then shall it come to pass that all such unmatured Christians shall bitterly cry out, "The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved." Jeremiah 8:20. Bible knowledge, you see, is the heaven's way unto salvation and eternity. But the modern minister's way is to keep men ignorant of what is taught outside their own circle, so they may have men under their control. That truth is growing, and that we should keep a pace with it. We shall now read Revelation 14:6-10. Fill my cup, Yah.
Like the woman at the well of a city, for things that could not satisfy, and then I heard my Savior speaking, "Drop from my well that never shall run dry. Fill my cup, Yah, lift it up, Yah. Come and quench the thirsting of my soul. Fill up heaven, feed me till I want no more. Fill my cup, fill it up, and make me whole. There are millions in this world who are crazy. The pleasure the things afford, but none can measure one rich treasure. And I find in Yahshua's my King. Fill my cup, Yahshua, I lift it up, yes, the Lord, and then clutch this thirsting of my soul. Bread of heaven, feed me till I want no more. Fill my cup, fill it up and make me whole. Oh, my brother, it's the thing this world gave you. It's hunger that won't pass away. My blessed King will come and save you. If you need Him, then I'll meet pray. Fill my cup, Lord. I'll lift it up, yours. Come and quench the thirsting of my soul. Word of heaven.